Hey, what's up, SPQ fans? This is John Tate, and I have the privilege to bring to you up close and personal everything Pittsburgh has to offer concerning the world of sports. Now, today, readers, with me is one of the hardest-hitting football players that ever came out of Western Pennsylvania. He also still calls this place home, out of McKeesport High School, All-American from the University of West Virginia, and former Pittsburgh Steeler, Super Bowl champion Mike Logan. Hey, Mike, what's happening?
Hey, John, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate all the compliments you gave me in the intro.
Hey, man, no problem. You deserved it. Like, you know, first of all, I just want to thank you for letting the SPQ family hang out with you. You know, like I said, you know, I listen to your show on ESPN Radio all the time, and you guys really, really work well together.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be on the air with you, man, and be a part of this. And, you know, being on the radio, man, keeps me connected to sports and keeps me on the sports scene here in Pittsburgh as well as nationally. So we try to, you know, present a very good product on the radio, and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Right, man. Like I said, man, you guys are, like, really good together. I like how you guys go back and forth. You're pretty knowledgeable. Everybody, you know, brings a certain type of a certain type of niche, you know, to the conversation. And, you know, it's pretty awesome. And I even like the fact that you picked up on hockey now.
Well, you know what? That's what makes our show unique and different from all the other sports radio talk shows going on here in Pittsburgh. We all have a different perspective of you know, sports. And I'm working with two guys who've been in radio for a long time. Of course, Scott Paulson, who's a Pittsburgh icon as far as radio goes. And then I'm working with a young guy named Chris Mack, who's very knowledgeable, very, I'd like to say smart beyond his years, because he knows the history of the game and he knows the future of the game. And then what I bring to the show is the inside perspective and the professional aspect of it. So that's how I'm able to relate to all the different sports, because I can talk to you about being a professional athlete. And that's one thing that a lot of sports talkers don't have. They don't have who played over a decade in the National Football League or a decade in professional sports. So I'm able to give and present different insight that the average fan or the average talk show host or the average person wouldn't know, because they haven't been a part of it.
Okay. All right, Mike, well, let's start from the beginning of your humble career. You know, I know there's always a point, you know, where people, like, say, hey, you know, I'm getting this. I'm getting, like, really good at this. Now, where was that point for you when you, you know, you looked in the mirror and said, man, I'm pretty good at this, and I can make some money?
Well, it's funny, man. When I was coming up and I played for the West Mifflin Trojans in Little League, little Pop Warner football, people used to always say, man, that guy's special. He might be able to go on and make it to the pros one day. But when you're that little, it's just a dream. You know, at that point in time in your life, it's just a dream. You always think about it, but you never know if it could become a reality. And I was a young guy that was born in St. Clair Village, raised in Whitaker Projects in West Mifflin, and graduated from McKeesport High School. So I never really thought that, you know, becoming a professional football player was what would happen to someone like me, because I didn't think that it happened like that. And I had an opportunity to go to West Virginia University on a full scholarship after playing high school football for the famed Whitfield coach George Smith. And when I got down to West Virginia, Hall of Fame coach Don Nealon told me, if you can keep your head straight and go out there and focus on the football field, you'll be playing on Sundays. You'll make a lot of money. And, you know, I had heard that a couple other times in my career, but when I was younger, and it really came to light when he said it to me, because he was a guy who had seen some professional players come through his program and make it in the NFL.
Right. Now, you stated you came out of McKeesport High School. Now, you know you were one of the top recruits in the whole entire state of Pennsylvania at that time. And you got the University of Pittsburgh right here in your own backyard, and they did not recruit you. And how did that make you feel?
Well, the story went like this as far as the University of Pittsburgh. They didn't offer me a full ride scholarship. At the time, I had played with a guy named Jason Chavis. He was one of my best friends on my team in McKeesport. And he was highly touted, All-American linebacker, and everyone wanted him. I mean, Penn State, Miami, Pitt, and we basically got together and said, you know, whoever goes D1 on our team, we had a pretty good team that year in 1991, we wanted to stay local. We actually wanted to all go to the University of Pittsburgh. He was getting pursued very heavily by Jerry Sandusky out of Penn State, and he had a choice on his hands. But I wasn't getting offered from Pitt, and it was the only Big East school that didn't offer me a full ride. And I didn't know if that was because they thought, well, he just wants to come to Pitt. Maybe he'll take a partial scholarship or be a walk-on. And I was kind of offended by that, more so hurt than anything, because my dad was a big fan of Pitt at the time, loved Tony Dorsett, loved Dan Marino, and I thought that I would be able to follow in those footsteps if granted the opportunity, and I wasn't. So I figured what better place to go to would be to travel down 79, go down to Morgantown, get to play for West Virginia, and compete against Pitt every year that I played college football. And that's what ended up happening. I was able to go down to West Virginia and compete against Pitt for my whole collegiate career.
Okay, so that's the whole story why you had to go across the tracks and play at West Virginia.
I mean, and it was a great opportunity. Don't get me wrong. Anytime you have opportunity to go play Division I football on a full scholarship, to become, you know, a scholar athlete, that's a blessing. But when you grow up in Pittsburgh and you have the history and the tradition here and your family is Pitt fans, you know, you want to go to the major university right here. Fortunately, I didn't have to go too far away from home, and my family was still able to be a big part of my collegiate career.
Right. Now tell me, man, be honest. How bad did you want to stick at the Pit every time y'all met for the backyard brawl?
Oh, listen, man, every opportunity that I had, and my best friend in high school, Jason Chambers, actually ended up going to Pitt, and we used to go at it, man. Every week before we got ready to play, I was giving him phone calls. He was giving me phone calls. Our families was getting together, talking all kind of mess. And I got to tell y'all, man, I ended up getting the best of him. I never lost a game to Pitt when I was down at West Virginia during my tenure. So I have them bragging rights over his head every time I see him. And we actually work in the same building now because he works for Channel 4 and WTAE, and I work for ESPN Radio 1250. So every chance I get to talk about Pitt and West Virginia in the backyard brawl, I bring it up on air to try to give it to him pretty hard, man.
I was getting ready to ask you, are you guys still cool? But I guess you already answered that.
Yeah, we still got a pretty good friendship until I start bringing up, you know, how we used to beat them down in the backyard brawl. And then that makes the dinner end pretty shortly because he's ready to get up and roll after that.
Yeah, you get a lot of extra spices in your food when you step away from the table, huh?
Oh, definitely, man. You got to pour it on, man. But it's all in good fun and good faith. We both had an opportunity to attend major universities, further our education, and it was just we were both very fortunate and very blessed to be able to do that. But, you know, I made sure to wear my gold and blue and represent West Virginia every time we're hooking up to meet or go out and eat, man, just to have one over his head.
Right. All right, now, after college, back in 1997, all right, you were drafted in the second round by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, you played there for about 4 years. Then you decided to sign for the hometown team. Now, what was the huge difference on how each organization was run, you know, between Jacksonville and the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, Jacksonville gave me my first opportunity to break into the National Football League, so I think Wayne Weaver and the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars and Tom Coughlin, who was the head coach at the time down there in Jacksonville. Jacksonville was a new franchise when I got there. I think they had only been in existence for 2 years. The good thing about me being drafted to Jacksonville is that one of my college teammates was actually down there drafted the year before, Aaron Beasley. He was a cornerback, so it was, you know, a little easier for me to make that transition to come down to Jacksonville because at the time they were new. They were still getting things in place, still trying to understand what it was to be a major franchise in the most popular sport in the U.S. Playing in the NFL. So a lot of things down there were brand new for them. And I had to learn the ropes just as they were learning, kind of just learn on the fly. The good thing was that Aaron was down there. He was able to provide some insight for me so I didn't have to struggle as much. Now, coming home to Pittsburgh, of course, I knew all the tradition. I grew up here. I was a Steeler fan. My grandfather worked in the J&L Steel Mills, actually on the site where I signed my contract when I came home to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I knew how things were run here. I knew it was the Rooney family. I knew it was businesslike. I knew it was a tradition about winning and great players. And this organization and staying involved in the NFL by radio and just some of the programs that we have, I can tell you that the Pittsburgh Steelers organization is top-notch. From the way they treat their athletes to the way they run their business, everything is on a professional standard. And I think if you talk to any athlete who has an opportunity to play in this organization, they will share the same sentiments as me about the Rooney family and the Pittsburgh Steelers organization.
Okay, all right. Now, in 2005, you guys won Super Bowl 40. All your hard work was paid off, you know, all the heat that you took in Latrobe, the 2-a-days, you know, Coach Cower spitting on everybody.
Yeah, had a couple of those Cower showers, man.
It was like the Cower showers.
Yeah.
When did it really hit you, you know, when you became a part of NFL history as a Super Bowl champion? Like, when did it really, like, you know, hit you?
John, you know, of course, it was the best year of my career because it had taken me 9 years to that point to get a Super Bowl ring and be called a Super Bowl champion. The average NFL career usually doesn't last that long. And for me to be able to play 9 years at that point, everything was right in front of me. It was something that my family wanted for me more than personal goals. And what made it really special for me is that my mother, who's since passed away, was able to see me become a Super Bowl champion and accomplish all the dreams and goals that I had set forth before me from playing football in her yard in 6C Midway Drive in the Whitaker Projects. At that moment, when we got up to Detroit, we walked out through that tunnel. I went through my routine of, you know, identifying my family and the audience and looking up at them and getting ready to run down on that kickoff. And after those lights and cameras and everything went off, all the flash bulbs in the stadium up there at Ford Field in Detroit, I realized that I was playing in the Super Bowl. Now, I don't know if you want to say this is unfortunate or not, I only got to play about 10 plays in the Super Bowl because I ended up getting a knee injury where I had to get my posterior reconstructed, my hamstring reattached to the back of my knee. I had a microfracture. I had torn meniscus, and I tore my LCL. And as I was walking off the field that day, knowing that basically my day was over and I didn't know if my career was going to be over, at that point I sat in that locker room, went in there, talked to the medical staff, got my diagnosis of my knee being tore up and needing posterior reconstruction. I sat there and I just prayed for my teammates. And I said, you know, I don't want to be selfish here, but I need you guys to come through and pull through with a victory, man, so I can make sure that all of this hard work over these, you know, what, I've been playing football for over 20 years at that point, over 25 years, I wanted to make sure that I would be able to leave at the pinnacle and say that I accomplished the biggest feat that was able to be accomplished in the National Football League by being a Super Bowl champion and winning the Super Bowl. And those guys came through. We were able to get the victory. And now I know that my name will be on back of the Lombardi Trophy forever, and it can never be erased. And to be a part of something so special and so sacred, it's just it's an amazing feeling, man, and I just thank God for being a part of it, just being a small part of it.
Right. Now, you know what, Mike, I'm going to tell you, man, even though you only played 10 plays, there's a huge, you know, gigantic percentage of NFL football players who've never even stepped on the field during the Super Bowl. So, I mean, even if you would have played one play, that still would have been, you know, that still would have been remarkable.
John,
so
John, if I would have just made the trip up there, being part of the team and being able to take part in the festivities and be with my teammates, be with the organization, I would have had no complaints, my brother. I was very, very appreciative of going out there and being able to represent the Pittsburgh Steelers and represent my family, represent the city, being a homegrown boy, man. It was just the most awesome feeling. I have no, no worries, and I don't regret anything about being able to only play a couple of plays out there, man. I still can look up and remember how the lights were flashing when I got up there and stepped foot onto that field, man. When just on the artificial grass and my cleats being on there, man, I would cherish that moment for the rest of my life.
That's what I'm talking about, man. So tell me, what'd you do with the bonus money?
You know what, man? John, I actually do. I have an organization called Logan's Heroes, a nonprofit foundation that I had established, I think, in 2003. And I put half of that money into my charity. And then I did end up taking my mom and sending her on a nice little trip and just doing some stuff for the family with that money. Because, you know, like you said, that's bonus money that ain't really counted into the figure of your salary and everything. So I wanted to do something special for myself. And I actually put the rest of it into a house that I had bought right here in Pittsburgh to ensure that I stayed in Pittsburgh for the rest of my life.
Man, that is totally awesome, man. You know what? Hey, I there's a whole bunch of people that wish they even had that opportunity, you know, and you made it happen. And I'm sure that you prayed for it and you hit those knees and everything worked out for you, man. God bless. That was great. That was really great.
Oh, man, listen, man. All credit due to the Almighty, man. I've been, a Christian my whole life, man, and the things that I've been able to accomplish were all through him, and he gets all the credit, man. And actually now, man, the way my life is transitioning after football and, I'm looking to get into ministry, man. I feel like I might have a calling to that. I'm going to continue to pray on that. Definitely hit the knees every night, man, and make sure that he knows that I'm giving him all the glory for everything that he's allowed me to accomplish.
Right. Now, just to switch gears just a little bit, Mike. Now, you're like one of the many, you know, athletes who made that transition from beginning, you know, from being a player, you know, to now a member of the media. You probably touched on this earlier, but do you feel that because of your experience playing the game, it was instrumental in preparing you, you know, for your current position at ESPN?
Yes, I do. Just for some of the things that I mentioned earlier, is to give you that personal insight. You know, sometimes when you're watching TV and there's reporters reporting on different sporting events, you want to know how credible their information they're relaying to you. So with me being, being able to play for as long as I did, there were so many things and experiences that I had to go through that I'm able to share. And sometimes, and I'm not knocking any of the guys in the media business, but if you weren't there, there's no way you can know how to handle it or what went on in those particular situations. So it made the transition a little easier for me because I had been through it. Now, where the strain comes in is that I'm not that far removed from the NFL. So there's a lot of guys that I played with, that I were teammates with. And sometimes when you're critiquing, you might put a little strain on a relationship or a friendship that you had with one of those guys. So that's where my difficulty comes in. But I was also equipped with some of the tools in having to deal with the media because I was interviewed, while I was a player. So it helped me establish a relationship with the media. One of the years I played for the Steelers, I ended up winning one of the chief award, and that's for cooperation with the media. And so I was kind of setting myself up for afterlife because I know that I couldn't play that game forever. And I think a lot of people get that misconception that after you have your career in athletics, you're going to retire and be well off. Brother, you better realize that you're going to have to do something else when you get done with this game. And that's something that I had thought about.
Yeah, when they take the air out of that ball, I know you have to have something to fall back on, whether it's like, a trade or education or
right.
or whatever, investments that you might have got into while you were playing in the league.
Right, and that's one thing that I was most proud of in my career, John. I was done with the game before the game was done with me, and a lot of players don't get that opportunity to do that. When my career was up, I actually came back to play another year after the Super Bowl, because that year was for me, and I don't want to seem selfish, but throughout my career, I basically, after I got drafted, I said, okay, I accomplished my goal of getting in the NFL. And it was almost like, okay, well, now I'm doing this for, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm doing it for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm doing it for my family because they, been supportive of me throughout my whole life wanting to be a football player. That last year, I knew that everyone had written me off because that was my second major surgery on my knees. And, I was older. I was over 30 at the time. And, Troy Polamalu that came in. We had some young, talented Anthony Smith guys who were, basically the up-and-coming guys and were going to be the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I said, I have one more year left on my contract, and I could have easily walked away and retired, being that I had accomplished the goal of being a Super Bowl champion. I had got my ring. I had got my bling. I could look at it every day. But there was still something in me that said, listen, you made a commitment to sign a contract where you have one more year left. And I sat down and I talked to my mom. She said, listen, you do whatever's in your heart to do, but just know you might have a feeling of unfinished business if you leave the game before you're ready. And I said, I'm going to come back for one more year and see if I can make the team. A lot of people had written me off prior to that training camp. So when I went out and had my best training camp that I've ever had in my 10-year career, and was able to make the team that year and, finish up my career. And that was one of the most fulfilling things that I've ever had in my life, man.
Right, so you had the opportunity to go out, the way you wanted to on a good note.
Yes, I definitely was able to go out on my own terms, man. And that last year, we didn't make the playoffs. We didn't have the most successful season. But at that time, I felt like that was one of my greatest accomplishments, was making a team when all the odds were stacked against me. And it gave me a little time that, like I said, to prepare for my life afterwards, because I knew that I was walking out on my own terms and was able to hold my head high because of the things that I had accomplished.
Okay. All right. Now, I don't know, Mike, if you're aware, but by the time, our interview hits the streets to our readers, Ben Roethlisberger's suspension for his misconduct is going to be over. All right. Now, speaking of that situation, now, some people in the world of, like, either entertainment or professional athletes, for some reason they feel some sort of entitlement because of who they are, what they have accomplished and how much they make. Now, tell me, what does it take for them to stay grounded, especially, when they're young, single, and they got enough money to buy a small country?
Well, you know what, man? The first thing you have to do, Jonah, and I think this is where a lot of young cats miss it and a lot of people do miss it, you got to recognize that this is God's doing, man, and that's first and foremost. You can go out there and throw touchdowns, make interceptions, make hard hits and everything, but you got to recognize that he gives you that ability to do that. And if you want to sit back and take credit for all that, that's where you're going to get yourself in a world of trouble, man. And you know what? We all do it. I was guilty of it. The next person that's going to be guilty of it, the only person that may not be guilty of it is Tim Tebow, the quarterback who just got drafted by the Denver Broncos. But I think that's where a lot of kids and a lot of guys go wrong, man. They don't recognize that. But John, it's so easy to get caught up in it, man. And we all did it. We just all didn't get caught, man. And you just really have to humble yourself and recognize that it's an honor and a privilege to be in that fraternity, to be able to make it on a professional level in your desired sport. And I think if that is instilled in some of these younger kids who are coming up and are fortunate enough to get drafted in their respective sport, then you won't have to deal with a lot of the stuff that comes along with it. But it's so easy to get caught up into it, John, and I fell prey, and more people will fall prey to it. But hopefully the NFL and the other major league sports are incorporating some kind of developmental teachings to these athletes when they become professionals to let them know that's exactly what it is. You have to be a professional, but you're dealing with young men who are getting a lot of money, more money than they ever seemed or imagined to have at one time at an early age. And it's really, really hard to take control of that because you are so overwhelmed by the situation. You're so overwhelmed by the lifestyle. You're so overwhelmed with the money that you get. And it just takes over you.
Right. Now, did you ever get a chance to read the article in the May issue of Sports Illustrated? Jack McCollum, he wrote an article called The Hangover. It was about Ben's situation. You ever get a chance to read that?
Yes, I did. I got an opportunity to read it.
Yeah, I mean, he painted him in a pretty bad light. And I guess, you know, Ben has nobody to blame but himself for that situation, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because it goes back to the entitlement that we just talked about. But,
right.
You know, you've attended the Steelers training camp this summer. Now, have you personally seen a change in Ben's attitude?
Well, first of all, I'll go into a little bit of the relationship that I had with Ben Roethlisberger when he first got to the NFL. Was one of his closer teammates at the time when he first came into the NFL and didn't know a lot about him, but we had some mutual friends that were around us. And for Ben to come into the league the way he did, now he already came into the league with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because he felt like some of the quarterbacks who got drafted ahead of him, he was better than. And he came in with something to prove. And guess what? That's the way you should come into the National Football League.
Yeah,
but,
I was going to say, I don't have a problem with that.
That's the way you should come into it. But Ben had so much success right off the bat. And he was playing the quarterbacking position. And it's a little different than just coming in and being the best offensive lineman or the best linebacker. He came in at the quarterbacking position and had instant success. And he's playing for one of the most storied franchises in the National Football League. That in itself is a lot to deal with. Now, you win the Super Bowl, you know, in your first couple of years, and you're leading this team, it's going to be hard to remain humble when you're a young kid. Remind you, Ben came out as a junior. When you're a young kid and you're having that much success. So he already was behind the ball as far as, you know, being able to deal with all that success as a young man. So his attitude was already of, you know, I'm coming in to prove all my critics wrong, and I did it. And once you prove your critics wrong, what do? You celebrate it, and you show that to them. And you put it basically back in their face to say, aha, I did that. Now, when you're mature, you know that you don't have to do that because your actions are speaking for themselves. And those guys and those people who doubted you, they're going to have to eat their words. But when you're young, you put it out there. And that's what happened to Ben. He said it in his own words. He got beside himself. He got caught up in it. The Big Ben name, and that was just another person. He forgot what his core values was and who he was, who Ben Roethlisberger was. So he changed, and he became something that he wasn't. Now you're starting to see some of those old characteristics come back of Ben. But our relationship isn't the same, Joe. You know, I'm not playing anymore. I'm not around those guys. I'm basically looked at as the enemy now because I'm in the media field, and some of those things they don't want shared. So I don't know him on a personal level. Now, from when I sit up there and I'm reporting on the sidelines and looking out there, it seems that he is a changed man and a changed teammate. He's spending time with the fans, which, you know, a lot of people used to get on him about because they said he wouldn't sign autographs after practice and training camp. He's doing that. He's involving all of his teammates. There was a situation that came up where Daniel Sepulveda said, look, my locker's right next to him. The guy never spoke to me. He's spending time with his teammates. He's going to their charity events. And I think that he finally gets it now. He understands this is who I was, but I lost sight of that. So hopefully he makes that change, and it's a genuine change. Because sometimes when you have to make that change and you go through it, it's not who you really want to be, and you start to fall off of that track. hopefully he understands it now, and I think he's done. I think he does, because all he's went through. He's went through so much, and it's changed his life. Hopefully it has changed him back to be the person that he claimed that he was in the first place.
Right. You know what? And I hope he does, too. And I'm glad that you had the, you know, the opportunity to explain that, because, you know, a lot of people looking from the outside in, you know, they don't know exactly what he's going through, or
right,
some of the things that's happening in his life. You know what I mean? And like you said, it's a lot of pressure, man. You're young. You're making millions of dollars.
It is.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not justifying anything that happened or was alleged to happen. Only Ben knows, the girl knows, and God knows, and he'll have to deal with that at a different time. But it's just about growing up now. You know, you have to understand what you put yourself in. And Ben can blame no one but himself, because he had the choice to make that. Just like he takes the credit for being the quarterback of the Super Bowl champion Pittsburgh Steelers in Super Bowl 40 and Super Bowl 43, he has to take credit for his actions of what happened, regardless if he was charged or not. And he's dealing with that right now. You know, his team is confused about who to play at quarterback and who to put on their roster. So he has to take the onus for putting his team in that situation. He also has to take, you know, the onus for what he's done to his name and his family, and he has to build back. But, John, you know, America, society is a forgiving society. I think once he gets back out there and starts to, you know, throw touchdowns, win again, they'll forgive him. You know, God is forgiving. But what Ben has to realize, you cannot – go through that again. You have to change your ways, and that's going to be the long testament of it, because even after his career is over, he's still going to have to live with the allegations and the things that he's went through. He might win a couple fans back, but there are some people out there that he may never win back, and he's going to have to carry that with him for the rest of his life.
Right. Well, you know what? I really hope things work out for that young man, because he's a talented football player, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to really need him this year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, they're already missing him right now, man. You've seen it. You've been through this preseason and see this quarterback battle that they're going through and the controversy that's going on right now. So hopefully he gets it together, because he's still a young man and he can still accomplish a lot. And the only way he's going to be able to do that is if he understands what he's done and who he is and what he's went through, and don't, you know, hold anything else against anybody else. You can't hold resentment towards anybody else, because you were the one that were in that situation. Regardless of what happened, you put yourself in that situation. And if he's able to do that, John, if he's able to say, okay, I'm responsible to it, and he's really genuine and sincere about it, then I think he'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Now, let me test your prediction skills real quick. Now, after the month of September is up, where will the Steelers be and why?
All right. Man, now, we're going on the assumption that Ben Roethlisberger's suspension will be reduced to four games, not six, correct?
Exactly.
All right,
that's
so. Because that's critical now. That's critical. So that means that whoever the quarterback is, whether it's Byron Leftwich, whether it's Dennis Dixon, or some miracle is Charlie Batch, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers will be 2-2 when Ben Roethlisberger is eligible to come back and take the reins again and be the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay, now that's safe to say 2-2, and I'm sure Ben will be back, because I know Roger Goodell told him, look, you kissed enough babies, I'm satisfied. You know,
right,
so
right.
We're going to find that out real soon. Now, tell me this. Now, since you've been at a training camp, what veteran Steeler do you think is going to have a breakout year?
I really, really think that Lawrence Timmons is finally going to break out of that shell and do everything that the Pittsburgh Steelers organization and fans, you know, have expected from him since he's been drafted. They kind of, you know, coaxed him along and kind of let him take some baby steps so he can come into his own. But watching him in training camp, man, he is a phenom. He can be a phenom. And we have a lot of phenom linebackers on this team. And James Harrison, who's an all-pro and, you know, NFL Defensive Player of the Year, and Lamar Woodley, an up-and-coming linebacker, they're both rush linebackers on the outside. Now, Lawrence Timmons, he would excel in that same role at outside linebackers, but you have those two guys there, so he plays in the middle. With his agility, his speed, and his range, he can do something that a lot of the Pittsburgh Steelers linebackers, inside linebackers, haven't been able to do for the past couple of years. And that's no knock on James Ferrier or Larry Foote, but the build and the makeup of Lawrence Timmons allows him to be able to rush up the middle and be a power blitzer. It allows him to, his speed allows him to be able to loop around and come from the outside, and his range enables him to cover tight ends who flex out in the lattice from the formation and be able to cover them down the seam of the field. That is such a rare blend of talent all put together in one individual. I think he finally gets it together and has a breakout year this year.
Okay, so we're going to be looking at Lawrence Timmons this year for the breakout still, right?
Now, listen, there's a lot of pressure on him now because there's a couple other publications that put him out there to be the breakout player. But after watching training camp, you know, because I was a little reluctant at first to say, oh, he's going to have a breakout year this year. But after watching him in training camp, I think he finally gets it.
Man, after what you just told me about him, I think you put some pressure on him too.
Hey, man, look, professional football is all pressure, man. It's just about how you handle it, how long your career can go, man. And that's one of the things that I was able to do. I was able to handle some of the pressure, man, because after my first couple of surgeries, you know, that skill diminishes. You get a step slower. That arthritis starts to jump up in there. You see how Brett Favre is coming back and taking all the time off out of training camp because he knows his body ain't going to be able to recoup. But it's how you handle the pressure of how long your career can last. And I think that young man has been able to handle the pressure of the expectations so far placed upon him. And I think this year it comes to materialize and he produces and put it out on the football field.
Okay, now what rookie will have the greatest impact on the season for the Steelers?
Maurkice Pouncey, without a question. First-round pick has already came in and basically taken the starting job from Justin Harwig, and he did it through hard work, dedication, and intellectual knowledge of football. This young man has come in, kept his playbook with him, stayed here during the offseason when everybody else left and went around. He stayed in the film room, got in the playbook, took his notes that he had from the OTAs, and applied them to his game. And guess what? It's showing out there on the field. This man has went through training camp, went through the coaching hazing of him having to run the rookie test twice out on in training camp and won a starting job. And guess what? He is not ready to relinquish that thing. He's going to have a breakout year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they're talking about him in the line of some of the other great Steelers centers who's played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not ready to say that just yet, but after you see him go out there and perform this season, I think we'll be back to the days of old when we had Dirk Dawson, Mike Webster, Jeff Hardings, some of the great Steelers centers who played for this organization. I think Maurkice Pouncey's name will be right up there with them.
You know what? I have to agree with you on that too, because you know I had the chance to see him playing in the preseason games, and he's a phenomenal athlete. You know, a freak of nature. But one thing about Maurkice Pouncey that no one talks about is how smart he is. That guy is very, very intelligent. You know, and a lot of, you know, athletes, they don't really get the credit for being, you know, how smart they are. It's always how fast they can run, how high they can jump or whatever.
Right.
But that Maurkice Pouncey, man, that guy's a genius.
You know what? I took notice to that when Mike Tomlin talked about him one of the first press conferences after OTAs, and he talked about his football intellect. And I said, if he has the intellect to be able to come in there and play center, John, center is one of the most complicated positions on a football team because they're the first person who's going to get the ball. Without them touching the ball, nobody else can move. So he has to understand what he is doing before anybody else gets the ball, gets the play started. And you can see him out there on the film calling out the fronts, calling out the plays, making the adjustments. And for a rookie to come in and do that from a college system says worlds about his football intellect. That young man is very bright, very smart, and that will help him in his career. People, just like you said, the reason that most guys don't make it in the NFL is because they can't pick up the system. He's already picked up the system, and he's excelling at it.
Right, right. And you know, so he's going to be the next great one as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, man, listen, it's written on the wall for him. If he's able to you know, stay healthy and go through and they're able to get him some help on that offensive line, which might be a little weak right now. He has big, juicy Chris Kimuatu working next to him, so they might be a good combination for a long time. But you got to have five guys working together and be, you know, have that cohesion for him to have a successful career. But I think the writing's on the wall for him to be mentioned among the greats.
Okay. Now, Mike, I'm going to throw a little question at you. This might hit, like, close to the heart. But which coach do you think will leave a longer-lasting legacy for the Steeler Nation, Cowher or Tomlin?
That's hard to answer right now because Mike's career is so fresh. They did give him an extension. But let's not forget, when Bill Cowher left the Pittsburgh Steelers, he was the longest-tenured coach in the NFL at that time. I think Jeff Fisher down in Tennessee has taken over that now. But when Bill left, he was the longest-tenured coach here in the NFL. So he's left a lasting impression. You know, you heard some of the people still saying after Mike Tomlin won the Super Bowl, well, that was a lot of Bill Cowher's team. No, that was Mike Tomlin's team because he was the one who coached the athletes out there. Bill may have recruited them and drafted them and had some of them here, but that was Mike Tomlin's team and he coached them. To establish and accomplish what Mike Tomlin has done so early in his career, it's kind of like what Ben Roethlisberger had to deal with and having that immediate success. Right now, Mike has a chance to do something so great, being the youngest African-American coach to win a Super Bowl, to take this team right now after the adversities that he's went through, not only on the field, but off the field. On the field with the injuries to Troy Polamalu and Aaron Smith last year, and to deal with all the things that happened this offseason, getting Super Bowl MVP traded, dealing with your franchise quarterback and not having him for the first four games. Mike Tomlin can do something very special this year and leading on in the upcoming years. So I don't know if I can answer that just yet. I know they both accomplished some great things for their respective teams that they have coaches, but I promise to come back on and do another interview with you after Mike Tomlin has had the opportunity and a fair chance to compare himself to Bill Cowher and answer that question more thoroughly.
That's cool. I hope I don't have to hold you to that interview because I definitely want to do it. And that was, you know, you picked up on something when you talked about Mike Tomlin, you know, being the youngest, you know, coach to win a Super Bowl and the fact that he's African-American. You know, I remember there was a time when there was no black head coaches in the NFL. Now we got three black coaches that just went to the Super Bowl recently.
Oh, man. And you know what, man? That is so outstanding for a game that so many African-Americans are involved in, and it gives our youth some hope to not only go into the field of athletics, but to go in the coaching, to go in the front office positions, to go in the refereeing. I mean, they are really laying some groundwork. Lovie Smith, Herm Edwards, Tony Dungy, and Mike Tomlin, all respectable men, man, all good Christian men who go out there and lead their teams by examples. And that's what I love about it, man. I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with Mike Tomlin. I didn't get a chance to play for him, but I had a lot of time to spend with him, an opportunity to spend a lot of time with him because our kids run track for the same youth organization, and Mike is out there supporting his kids as a parent. And if you get to sit down and talk to this young man, you understand why he's able to accomplish some of the things he's able to accomplish. I mean, very bright, very smart, very caring, has an open heart, but he's able to also read people, and when people are trying to play him off, he's able to combat that in a respectable manner to where you don't even know he's doing it, man. And I love that about that man, man. I love his you know, attitude towards life, not only just the game of football, but towards life. He appreciates living. And when you're around someone like that, man, you want him to be successful, and he'll garner that success just by his attitude.
Right, right. You know what? I'm going to tell you, I've ran into, you know, Coach Tomlin a few times at some of those track meets too, and he just blends in so well with everybody. It's like, you know, it's like, wow, you know, here we are sitting next to the, you know, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and this guy's just like down earth, just like everybody else.
Listen, man, we both got in trouble for going down and trying to run over and jump on the track while our kids were running. And they said, listen, y'all, we don't care who y'all is, Mike and Mike, y'all Pittsburgh Steelers and coaches and everything. We said, listen, we are parents out here. You know, I'm Trey's dad. He's Dino's dad. We're just out there at the track, man, being who we are. And to be able to sit up there with the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers and him just mingling right along with us. I mean, we'd be like, Mike, you forgot the juice boxes, man. You got to go back to the store and get the juice boxes, because he's a parent. And he's able to do that transition, man.
You had to send Mike Tomlin back to the store to get the juice boxes.
Hey, man, listen, when it's his turn to do out there to do your parent responsibility, man, you got to come through. This is for the kids. So Mike came a couple times without them juice boxes. Hey, look, we said, look, man, you got to go back there and get them juice boxes. We need the 48 count, not just the 24. Go get a 48 count. And guess what? He did his parent responsibility, went out there, got some tents for the kids, and made sure that everybody was taken care of, man. And you got to love a man that does stuff like that.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. All right, Mike, we're going to wrap this up in a second, but you know I got to ask you, man, who's going to the Super Bowl this year?
Woo! All right, this is my prediction for the Super Bowl this year. I think the Indianapolis Colts make it back from the AFC. I really think that Peyton Manning, anytime you have Peyton Manning on your team, man, you have an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. I think he leads them back this year only because Bob Sanders is coming back to that defense, which was a little weak last year. So I think Indianapolis will represent the AFC. And in the NFC, I'm going with the Green Bay Packers because Aaron Rodgers is definitely a quarterback coming into his own with Ryan Grant in the backfield, Jennings out at wide receiver, Donald Driver at receiver, and JerMichael's at the tight end. I think they have a lot of weapons. I think the defense will hold up. I think they'll represent the NFC. So I'm going with the Indianapolis Colts versus the Green Bay Packers.
That sounds pretty good because I got one of the two in there too. You know what I'm saying? Now,
Which one?
Oh, I'm going to tell you. I got the Colts. And the only reason why is to me, you know, I still feel that the Indianapolis Colts, they're the best team in the AFC. They should have been undefeated last year, but Coach Caldwell was tripping. You know, he made them sit out the last weeks. That's how the Jets snuck into the playoffs, because they set the starters down in the last 2 weeks. And when they got on the field against the New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl, they left a trail of rust all over the place.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, did you see the playoff game against the Jets? They were so rusty in the first half. If the Jets would have had firepower, they could have snuck into the Super Bowl.
Well, you know, I tell you what, man, you still got that Revis situation hanging over their heads right now, and their quarterback doesn't look as strong as he did, you know, at the beginning of last year. So I don't know how strong the Jets were going to be. They got a heck of a defense, and they got a heck of a coach who has that defensive mentality. But I still think that the Indianapolis Colts will represent the AFC.
Yeah, the Indianapolis Colts, that's who I'm going to go for. And then in the NFC, I'm thinking, man, that we're going to get a Super Bowl team with home field advantage this year. I think the Cowboys is going to make that trip.
Hey, that'll be nice, man. That'll be the first time a home team get to play that Super Bowl in their own stadium.
Man, it's time for that. I think, you know, Miles Austin, he's the truth. Dez Bryant, man, he's a freak of nature. All they going to do, man, is just help, you know, that further development of Tony Romo. I think they're going to make that step. You know, I don't think Brett's going to play a whole year. I think his ankle's going to bother him. Peterson's been having two fumble problems. I mean, even though he's the best back in the league, he could drop that ball on the carpet at any crucial time. And who's to say he won't do it in the playoffs like he did last year?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think Minnesota is going to go back either, although I did get Brett Favre in one of my drafts for my fantasy team. So hopefully he's able to put up some stats. But I don't see them going back and making a strong push as well. The only thing about Dallas, and you touched a little bit about it when you were explaining it, is Tony Romo. Is this the year he finally is able to, crack the pressure instead of the pressure cracking him? And I still don't have that belief in him just yet. He does have some great weapons to work with, but it's ultimately going to come down to him. And I just feel like that Aaron Rodgers is more into his progression of his career than Tony Romo at this time.
Right, and I do like Aaron Rodgers, and my fantasy football draft is coming up this weekend, and I hope I get Aaron Rodgers. I'll be very, very happy if I do. You know, I kind of heard about your fantasy football team. You drafted by the computer. I heard it wasn't good.
Man, listen, now, I think they hoodwinked me, man, because they had the draft the day when I was off. So, you know, I was out the studio that day. They knew I had some things that I had to do, and I'm getting myself together. And I happen to tune in, and I hear them saying, oh, you know, our fantasy draft has just got underway. So, man, I'm trying to get home and get to my computer and log on. And I got to the computer at the last round, the last pick, and my squad was already set. But guess what, man? I'm going to still go out and represent. I'm going to make me some power moves. And last year was my first year being even involved in fantasy football, and I made it to the championship. So hopefully some of that beginner's luck is still going to rub off on me, and I'll be able to compete with those guys and be back in the championship this year.
All right, that's cool. Now, let's see. Let me throw this little question at you, and this is like for all the fans, you know, because we're a little worried, you know, after this season. Now, is there going to be football in 2011?
Oh, man, I do believe – that there's going to be football in 2011. There may be a little lockout in the beginning of the year when the off-season programs are supposed to be taking part, but I think they'll get it fixed by then. And the only reason I say that is because of money. The NFL produces billions and billions of dollars every year. And I think even though the owners have that TV contract and they have money backed up between them, they don't want to do damage to their game right now. It's the most popular sport in the United States. NFL football, the attendance records are growing, breaking attendance records every year. Stadiums are growing. They keep building new stadiums. They build them bigger and bigger every year. They don't want to lose that relationship they have with the fans. And if they make a stoppage, I think that, you know, a lot of fans will resent them saying, well, they make so much money anyway. I mean, owners and players. So I do think that they'll get some things worked out, but there's a lot of things in that CBA that have to be worked on. I mean, they're talking about expanding the season. That's going to do some things to expanding rosters, talking about extended health care for players. There's a lot of work to be done in a short period of time. I think the players have good representation in Damaris Smith, a smart African-American man who understands business. And that's what the NFL is. It's business and entertainment. And I think people forget that sometimes, just thinking that it's sports. But it's business. So the PA has a good representative for them. The owners always are going to have good representation. So when they sit them guys down together next year, this offseason, there's going to be a lot of bumping heads and going back and forth, and there may be a stoppage during the OTA sessions or the off season. But once it's time to get the season cranked up, I think they work out them differences, and there'll be football in 2011.
Man, I hope so, man. I hope those guys just, you know, sit at the table, you know, lock that door, you know, get together, hash out all the differences, because I just cannot imagine what a fall will be like without NFL football. I'm not even trying to think about that.
Yeah, believe me, man, we get a lot of people calling in, emailing the show saying, man, what are we going to do if there's a stoppage in football? I said, listen, we ain't going to worry about that, because I think they're going to knock it down and get it done.
You know what's going to happen, man. It's going to be another baby boom. We can't watch no football. We got to do something else. Like,
hey, man. No, we don't need to do that, man. The population is good right now. We don't need to be bringing two, you know, having another baby boom bringing this world, populating this world like that, man.
I hear you, man. I'll tell you what, this is the last question for you, man. Les Wong got arena football in here to Pittsburgh Power, getting ready to play in April. Are you going to the tryouts?
Man, listen, I've been asked this question since they started bringing this up. About Pittsburgh getting the arena team, man. I'm currently getting back into shape, but I will not be out there trying out, man. These knees are too beat up, man. I feel too good right now not having to come in and work out every day. I did blow up a little bit, man, so I'm trying to cut these pounds back off of me right now. But my football career, man, is over. I enjoyed it. I don't even know if I can get out there and play in them little them turkey bowls that they have. I used to be little, and when my dad and them used to go out on Thanksgiving to play in a turkey bowl, I said, man, I can't wait till I get old enough to go out there and do that. I don't even think I can go out there and mess around in that no more, John. I'm done, man.
I hear you, man. Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. Man, I had a great time, and I wish we could talk for more and more and more. I want to thank you for taking time out, you know, to reach out to the SPQ family. I wish you nothing but the best. I wish nothing but the best for your family, the future success of your show, everything.
John, I appreciate you having me, man. Anytime you guys need me, man, I'll be around. I'm born and raised in Pittsburgh, man. I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. Hopefully I'm doing some great things either in ministry or with the youth, man. God bless you, and thanks again for having me.
All right, Mike, not a problem, man. We will definitely talk later.
All right, John, thanks.
Okay, all right, SPQ family, this is John Tate saying see you later, fam, and look out for other great sports figures talking the talk with SPQ.